Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Alessandria Polizzi. On our podcast, we discussed resiliency skills, stress management, emotional agility, psychological health, and safety. Today's show is called A Little Help from My Friends, and we're going to talk about building resilience through social support. A 2021 study out of China, and I'll put a link to it in the podcast notes, explored the impacts of age, social support, and resiliency on mental health during the current pandemic. They found that social support served as a buffer against the negative impact of low resilience on mental health. From the article, here's a quote: "As people face an onslaught of stressors related to the disruptions in their lives caused by the pandemic, they should rely on each other for connection and coping strategies to ease the weight of the public health crisis on their mental health. Therefore, understanding individual mental health outcomes and related protective factors such as social support, psychological resilience, can help provide better targeted suggestions and assistance for different people," end quote. So according to the researchers, a wealth of research has already demonstrated the protective effect of perceived social support on mental health in stressful situations. That's why I call this A Little Help from My Friends. This research shows that social support acts as a buffer to alleviate the negative influence of stress on well-being and mental health. And they have a chart that shows even if you have low resilience, which we're going to talk about having high resilience as well, but having that social support will positively impact your mental health. As you build your resilience, it also increases exponentially, more than remote support, more than moderate support, and more than what they call proximal support, which is all remote, which is an interesting thing to talk about given our current situations regarding hybrid. So here to talk about social support and helping each other is my friend Yuri. Hi, Yuri.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Would you mind introducing yourself to our audience?
Sure thing. Yes. So I'm Yuri Rosso. My background is really in basically researching resilience and all types of different parts of resilience over the last too many years and over time of published quite a few books and research papers on the neuroscience of resilience. You know, how does it work in the brain? What is it? How do we measure it? How do we improve it? And recently, over time, being looking more into connected resilience. So the idea of resilience that's not just an individual thing, but it's something that arises from us being together and supporting each other. So yeah, this research that you're looking at here is really interesting, and keen to talk about this a bit more.
Well, thanks again for joining us. And tell us the name of your company.
Yeah, so the company that I started is called Driven. So hellodriven.com. So that is really about creating tools for individuals to start to work on their own resilience. So we've got an app called the Driven Resilience app that is an AI-powered self-coaching program that takes all these ideas about neuroscience and resilience and puts it into something nice and simple. And we've also got then, of course, coaches and psychologists using this as well, and universities and all types of different organizations. So a whole lot of things that we're working on there.
Yeah. What's interesting for you to talk about connected resilience is actually makes me think of how you've set the platform up, because it's through really a chat experience, which is way more connected than like the traditional kind of tell or learn, which is very kind of individual and isolated. So I'm just curious if that's kind of part of your overall connected strategy.
Yeah, it is a bit like that, because it's through that interaction that I think people can feel that there's more responsiveness here to what is on my mind and how can this give me things that I'm wondering about. And that's where the chat type of approach, rather than, you know, just watching a video, which, you know, videos are great and all, but if you can have more interaction and almost feel like you're chatting to someone, then it, yeah, it does make it more feel more like there is connection. And, you know, some people have even asked us, like, who's the person on the other side? And I'm like, No, it's an AI. It's just automated. So yeah, it all comes back to that really fundamental need that we have to connect with people and even connect with something.
So part of your program, one of the things you're going to be launching soon or in the process of launching is this resilience first aid. Can you talk about how that relates to this social support and resiliency?
Yeah, so resilience first aid is a bit of a different take on how can we support resilience in each other. So, and this is really talking about how do we start to be much more proactive about mental health, because a lot of the programs and the inner training that is out there is much more reactive. It's basically like looking for, you know, how do you notice, you know, my friend or my coworker is depressed or is suicidal or something like that, and how do you respond to that? Very important for when that happens, but by then it's a little bit late. Like, we should have really started much earlier. Can we start to have really good conversations in a very proactive and a preventative way so that we can support that resilience within each other? We can build those strong relationships ahead of time to prevent people from actually going down that path of mental illness in the first place. So, and that is where the combination of resilience and, you know, close support that we see in this research as well is really what we're looking to build through Resilience First Aid, as it's basically in a two-day course to learn about, you know, what's the actual language you can use, what can you actually say, what can you notice in people, how can you have really positive and really uplifting conversations with each other that builds connection, that builds support, and then creates this connected resilience between each other that then protects people in the long term. Because, and this is something that I think we'll probably dive into a little bit more as we go, which is that all support is not necessarily equal, because the, you know, just because you have people around you doesn't necessarily mean it's good, because there's a lot of what we saw through the pandemic as well, where people kind of feed on each other's fear. They feed on the fear of the situation, and it's, and everyone kind of gets more panicked together, and then you know, even get, you know, all kinds of social upheaval that follows from that. So how can we be more mindful about what do we actually say? What's the language that we use to uplift each other rather than, you know, feed into the fear of the situation? So that's essentially where Resilience First Aid is coming in as a new course we're launching around that.
And what was the impetus? I mean, what kind of prompted that idea to focus on this connection versus the individual need?
Yeah, good question. And it's part of what we've seen for quite a while as we've been working with a lot of organizations, basically training individuals in resilience and building this out into different industries as well, like with firefighters and, you know, police and so on, where we see a lot of what actually reduces people's resilience is what comes from the environment itself. Because it's, you know, and it's kind of interesting. Like with paramedics, for example, they deal with really difficult, you know, kind of horrific situations on a daily basis. And a lot of that is actually okay. But then what really affects them is, you know, the conflict that they have with a manager, and it's, you know, not having access to all the materials and all these kind of things, and it's the environment that's created around them. And so it's really, you know, us learning more and more from that and starting to see just how important it is for us to actually look after each other and to really care about each other and create an environment that's supportive. So that's where we took all these years of observations that we made, and we said, all right, great, let's put it together. Got, you know, a couple of other experts together as well, and put this into something that's, you know, nice and simple that we can actually get out there and just start to create some more proactive conversations that I think can really change some lives.
Yeah, that's interesting to mention about the paramedics and emergency services. We saw the same things with veterinarians, right? So veterinarian industry has a pretty significant mental health issue. And a lot of people go, oh, is that because of the euthanasias? And it's actually not. It's related to the clients. And as you think about this approach, how much does it connect to things like psychosocial risks and some of the hazards in psychological health and safety? Is that in the mix as part of learning about supporting each other?
Yeah, so essentially in terms of creating a sense of safety, so that's something we talk quite a bit in the course itself, is understanding, you know, even from a neuroscience perspective, what is the type of things that activate more the fear areas of the brain? How can we use language to moderate that? How can we build an environment that supports more a sense of safety that then, of course, causes more activation in the frontal cortex, allows us to think more clearly and to feel more open with others and to connect with others. So a lot of those ideas are fairly central to it, because it is that sense of safety that we need to create around each other. And that's also where I'm really excited to take this out into workplaces more, where I think there's a lot of managers, for example, that can really benefit from learning this type of language and learning what is it that impacts individuals and how can I, with the influence that I have over my team, create an environment that really supports psychological safety within individuals, so that, you know, people feel safe and they can do their best work. They're not, you know, because if your employees have their fear areas activated, then the work is not going to be as good and it's going to cause more issues and they're going to be unhappy and you're going to be unhappy and then everything just kind of escalates. So, and it's even those same ideas of creating psychological safety for from a parent to a child, for example, as well. Where if you know more of the language that you can use, how can you talk to them? How can you have a real conversation where you really appreciate them, you really listen to them, and you choose language that actually uplifts them with, you know, wherever they are, and they feel that, yeah, okay, I can actually talk about the things that are on my mind and you're not going to judge me for that. And we can have a real understanding and we can have a real conversation. So yeah, that's those things I think are very central to it. And it's basically putting all of that in the context of the six domains of resilience that that we've developed with our model, and being able to recognize all the different parts of that. What are the highs and lows of it, and how do you talk about it? So that's all what essentially comes together within that concept of resilience first aid, which is kind of an interesting term by itself as well, because it's really about that idea of the first aid is something to apply much more proactively. So rather than wait for something go wrong, you know, start talking today. Just actually have some meaningful conversations.
Real quick question. What are the six domains of resilience?
So there are six key ones here. So there's vision, which is about your sense of purpose and meaning in life. That one's interesting. It's essentially the one that we see is most important. Like if you have that, then everything else kind of forms around that. There's composure, which is about your ability to regulate emotions. There's reasoning, which is more the proactive side of resilience. So planning ahead and being able to, you know, challenge and introspect, you know, your own beliefs as well. There's health, which is more the physical side of it. So nutrition, sleep, exercise, looking after yourself on a regular basis. There's tenacity, which is more about persistence and motivation. That's often the one that people associate most with resilience, because it's kind of like bouncing back, but it's really just one part that supports all the other ones. And then there's collaboration, which is more the human connection side, communication skills, you know, support networks, and actually actively investing in relationships themselves. So it's all those domains that come together and they all interact with each other in all these kind of interesting ways that enable us to actually be resilient. So it's when we activate those domains, that is when we are resilient ourselves.
So why does social connection help with resiliency and mental health? I mean, it's part of your six domains, but you're really focusing on it. Why is that?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's part of the fundamental needs of the brain. So that's part of what we educate people on. It's just understanding these things that are actually really fundamental in terms of what we need as humans to feel that life is worthwhile and that I have that reason to activate those domains of resilience. So, and social connection is so deeply wired into the brain. For example, there's the fusiform gyrus, which is, you know, a big area of the brain towards the bottom that is really focused on understanding in fine detail the expressions of other people and recognizing faces and all that, and it's through that we, you know, understand the motivations of others, and we feel that other people care about what I have to do, and therefore I want to do these things and I want to continue doing them because, you know, there are people that are interested in it and I'm contributing to them as well. Because that's one of the things that, you know, plenty of research have confirmed now as well. So when you help someone else, it actually improves your own well-being. So it's, you know, not just getting help, but it's feeling like, yeah, I'm doing something worthwhile. I'm doing good things. And you feel good about yourself. And it's part of that connection with other people that enables that. And it's kind of interesting here, just looking at the research as well, which is something that I've always thought about, which is connection that is not face-to-face, that is not in person, is not as effective in activating those areas of the brain. So you don't get as good a connection with someone, you don't get as good of an activation within the brain to feel like I'm really, getting the most out of the conversation itself. So that is where, you know, this type of thing of, you know, being in the pandemic where everyone now is kind of socially distanced, it makes it harder for people to really feel connected with other people. You know, even though people know that they should be, you know, talking to people, it's not, they've got like message fatigue and, you know, fatigue of, you know, Zoom fatigue and all those type of things as well, because it's not as much fun to talk, you know, over, you know, all the technology that we have as it is to do it in person. And part of that is lag. So that's kind of weird how, you know, technology stuff kind of comes back into the brain itself, where once you've got that type of lag where people go like, oh, can you hear me? And, you know, there's a little bit of a delay and the communication doesn't flow as easily. That is part of what short circuits those areas in the brain a little bit, and you don't feel as connected. And therefore, I think that's what comes out in the research as well, where they see that in more distant connections is not as effective as having someone there with you, like in person. Which I guess it comes back to the thing that, you know, we really need to get back to that place where we can actually see each other in person again.
Real bummer when I read that. I was like, I don't even know if I want to even mention it, because that's like
bad news. It is a bit like that. So it's, okay. But and again, I think there, within those findings about, you know, distant connections are not necessarily as good as in-person connections, I think within that is a further clarification that needs to be made in terms of the type of connection. Because then again, if you have, you know, a couple of friends, you know, all over the city that you're messaging, but, you know, some of them are kind of doing well, but other ones are struggling themselves and they're feeding into the fear of the situation, and in that, you know, kind of way, you know, drags you down almost, that the type and the quality of connection matters. And I think that's where it comes back to each of us. What's the language that we choose to use with the people around us? Are we going to feed into, you know, limbic brain activation, and we're going to, you know, escalate the kind of, you know, bad things that we're seeing? Or are we going to choose to have some more language of hope and language of optimism that we share to, you know, look at, hey, these things are improving, and, you know, there's hope, you know, there's things that I want to do, you know, when all this ends, and there's other things that I'm doing right now, and giving people reason for hope and being able to support each other in that way. So I think it happens a lot more naturally when people are in person, but yeah, so maybe over that's an interesting question. Like, over text, are you more likely to be negative than in person?
Yeah, how many WTFs do you do in person? I don't know. So the episode before this, we talk about tragic optimism, and how they measured tragic optimism was actually acceptance. So and that's neither good nor bad. That's just accepting, right? Like, okay, well, it is what it is. So how do I make the best of it? Or like, what are ways in which, like, it's you know, dialectical of it's both. So, you know, what's interesting to me is, like, you and I connect, right? And so, no, we haven't met in person, but, you know, I know what your house, you know what my house looks like. Like, we know if pets come by, like, it's very personal. Like, imagine if you had all these people actually come into your home in the way that they've all been coming into your home. So it's just an interesting insight about I was really surprised, to be honest, about the proximity on this study. You know, it's one study, but still, but it made such a difference. And again, we'll put that in the podcast notes. There's this chart that I can add, and other folks can, you know, equally get depressed on that, but or not.
Or we just be more mindful of what we say and how we talk.
acceptance of reality. You hit on something that I wanted to ask about, which is, you know, I've always said that one of the best ways to learn is to teach. And so is there a world in which you, through taking this first aid course, I learn things about myself? So there's the innate benefit of helping others, right? Which is, as you said, has been scientifically proven to help bolster your emotional well-being. But also, I have to learn the things anyway to help others. So does that help me apply them to myself?
Exactly. And that's part of where the course is set up as something that there's the 2 days that you start with, which teaches you more about how do you talk about it, how do you have conversations about it. But then after that, then you also get access to the app for a year where you can actually start to use those concepts yourself and just keep learning about it. Because that's part of what enables conversation in the first place, is if you're trying out things and you're making realizations, and then you get that own experience that you can then share with someone else and go like, oh yeah, I just learned this interesting technique and I was trying it out and it actually made a difference for me. And it gives you more, you know, authentic ways to talk about it as well, and more experience to be able to share those ideas. And I kind of liken resilience first aid to being, you know, learning how to cook, because it's really easy just to start cooking. You know, you get a really basic recipe, you get some pasta and you throw it in water and you throw in a pack of sauce, and then I got something to eat. But it can take, you know, many years to become a world-class chef. So it's that type of thing as well with resilience first aid, where it's really easy just to have those, you know, learn the basics and start having conversations and just start talking about it. And as you talk about it and as you practice it and as you learn more, then you can become better and better at this. And you also work on your own resilience, because that's one of the parts, you know, towards the end of the course, is looking at how are you going to support yourself as well, because you need to support yourself if you're going to be supporting others. That's something really important, of course, is we don't want to sacrifice ourselves for the sake of the other, of someone else. You need to be able to maintain yourself and build yourself up so that you're stronger to support the people around you. So yeah, exactly. It comes back to that kind of idea of just starting this longer journey about learning about yourself, building your own resilience, building the resilience of people around you. And I think through that, like, the more and more we can do that type of thing, the more we can create this kind of community connected effect that spreads out and really starts to lift resilience and lift mental health to, you know, across communities rather than just, you know, an individual here and there.
Yeah. I mean, when you and I first met, you were talking about some of the work that you were doing in schools, some of the work that was kind of blossoming this beyond just the employee, but also to their family and creating resilient family life, which I think is pretty spectacular because it's systemic. It isn't like segmented, it's whole person. And so when I saw this was coming out, I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, right? But why do you think it's important to look more broadly than to just say, well, I just need to worry about you being resilient at work?
Yeah, if only it was that simple, right?
I don't really care if you're crazy at home.
Go pick the dog. Yeah, exactly. Here you need to function. Over at home, you can be crazy. So,
by the way, so don't kick the dog. I have to just say that. No dogs were harmed in the recording of this podcast.
it's a good question, because it's essentially that where I think we have gone so wrong over the years in terms of how we train people. And it's probably why, you know, if we look at the charge in mental distress, it's just kind of increasing year after year. We're not actually solving the more fundamental problems that is happening with mental health, you know, globally. And instead, that is why we should be looking at, if we're going to be building mental health, if we're going to be building resilience, we should look at it more at a holistic perspective. We should do it at work, and the training that people do at work should also be applicable at home. If we can then also provide that training for the family members at home so that they understand, this is the kind of coping strategies that, you know, my husband or my wife is using, or my parents, I can use these two, and the managers understand that language as well, and everyone starts to get this more holistic understanding of what really helps humans to thrive, what helps the person next to me thrive, what helps me thrive. And if we can all start to, you know, work on those things together, then I think we can also start to create an environment where when someone is actually going through a really hard time, there is a much bigger and a much stronger safety net for them that, you know, we can catch them a lot sooner and a lot earlier before things get really bad. So it's good to see that there are organizations that are starting to understand that as well and starting to see that, yeah, actually we should do a bit more. Like if we want people to be effective at work, we should care about them being happy at home as well. Because if they're happy there, then they're happy here too. So that's basically a shift that I think it just kind of comes with the evolution of our understanding of humans and human functioning that I think we're starting to see now and then actually starting to put that into practice. So exciting times in a way.
It is. I mean, it's, we're meeting a need, right? Mm. And you kind of wish we didn't have the need, but we are where we are. Yeah. Again, acceptance. Okay, not to give away any secrets, but if you were going to have one tip for resiliency, connected resiliency, what would be one thing that you would want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, I'd go back to one of the points that we mentioned before, which is choosing how you interact with people. And are you, you know, when you talk to people about all these things going on and you're, you know, sharing the latest numbers or whatever, is that a good thing to do? Is that something that, you know, contributes to the well-being of someone? Or can you kind of move away a little bit from all the fear of the situation and all the bad things that are happening and look more for something that is hopeful and share more of that type of language, you know, share more your ideas about, you know, what are things that we can do? What am I looking forward to? What are my goals? What are your goals? And talk about those type of things that give people a sense of hope for the future. So that would be one fairly practical thing I think that we can all probably benefit from.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the studies show, like I said, that acceptance and gratitude, right, are two very powerful activities. And it's not about shoving down and pretending like things aren't happening, right?
Yeah.
But it's about how do you process that with balance.
Yeah, so exactly.
Great tip.
It's a kind of realistic sense of optimism that we talk about in resilience as well, which is, you know, it's going to be tough, but let's be hopeful regardless that we're going to succeed and we're going to make it through. And because ultimately, at the end of the day, a year from now, things will have moved on and, you know, life will still be going on. So we don't need to be too panicked right now. So it's, but
or,
it's not going to be.
And. That doesn't change anything. Right? So here we are. here we all are. Okay. I know. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I was just looking more at the research again, and that's, It's an interesting thing where we all have, you know, there's connections that we can make, but there's also resilience that we can work on within ourselves. And both of those are working together in terms of protecting mental health. And I think especially now with everything that's happening with the pandemic and all those, you know, all the disruptions that we have, I think it's such a good opportunity in a way just to introspect in our own lives and our own minds. How are we handling this situation? How are we handling the information that's coming in? How are we handling the information overload and all these kind of conflicting ideas and all the, you know, different things happening in the media and in society and so on? And reflecting on, what does that mean to us? What are the emotions that come up within myself? And starting to think about, you know, are all these things helpful for me? Are my thought patterns helpful? And can we use this situation and even the chance to be more at home and, you know, have more time to introspect and start to just to really consider our own minds more and see, can I use this as an opportunity to build resilience and build skills across resilience? So even thinking about all those six domains, how am I doing across each of those? And can I start to do some more across each of those to be better within these kind of situations? Because basically, you know, these kind of things are going to come up again in the future. So we're not going to get through here and then, okay, now it's smooth sailing for the next four decades. You know, we can hope, but, but realistically, we should probably take this as an opportunity to see how can we prepare better for the future so that when this type of thing, you know, happens again, you know, it'll be something totally different, of course, or it might be, you know, something similar, but then at least we're more prepared and we feel that, yeah, we made it through that. We learned a lot from it and now we're stronger. Now we can deal with this type of stuff together and we both know how to really support each other in all kinds of different ways so that maybe next time we do the same research, then those lines look quite a bit different. And you know, even distance support is also, you know, very useful in the same way that having someone next to you is really useful.
I mean, I think it's an important reminder that it's a both and. We need to take care of ourselves and build skill and capability around resiliency and how we manage stress and how we process difficult times. And we can't isolate and insulate. We have to connect. And so that's what you're seeing. And one thing I want to ask before we end is, because you're so good at explaining neuroscience in a way that normal people like me can understand. So I'm just curious, you know, with that social connection, is there something firing in the brain that makes that really important?
Yeah. And it's that close connection that we have, and especially when we're seeing, you know, someone more in person as well, that you get stronger firing of, you know, the fusiform gyrus, you know, that area that, you know, recognizes expression and intentions. There's mirror neurons, which we're a little bit unclear still what exactly they do, but part of what mirror neurons do is to help us understand the intentions and the goals of others. And through all of that activation, then we get more oxytocin that's released as well. And oxytocin, of course, and it makes us feel good, but it also makes us feel that, you know, I can trust you. I understand, you know, who you are, what you're about. And I feel that I have a connection and therefore I have more of a feeling of safety as well. So I can be a little bit more open and honest about myself and what's going on. And through that, then it's something that we have a deep need for, because it's basically it's what the brain wants, because we've, you know, we're such a social society as well, that, you know, when we have that stronger connection, then we feel that, hey, you know, life is actually pretty good and I've got people that care about me, I can talk about things, and that connection, that firing that happens in the brain. The further away you move from each other and the more there's some kind of disconnection, whether it's, you know, lag in the on a Zoom call, or if it's you know, just through text or something like that, there is less of that activation that happens, partly because we don't have direct control over that activation. Like the fusiform gyrus, those areas, it really activates through what we see. So if I can't see a person, then that area doesn't activate, because if it's just over text, all I'm seeing are little words, and that, you know, only activates, you know, different areas of the brain. So yeah, so the more that we can have connections that are a little bit closer in some kind of way, the more effective it is to activate all those different areas of the brain. So if you can do a phone call rather than a chat, then that's better. And if you can do a video call rather than a phone call, then that's even better. And if you can do in person rather than a video call, then that's even better. Except if you need to socially isolate. So it's basically that's something that I think we can all consider as well, is, can I elevate this conversation to, you know, a more closer form of connection. Like, can I do a phone call rather than a text? Although I know a lot of people are very afraid of phone calls these days. But so as long as it doesn't activate too much anxiety. But yeah, can we do a form of connection that activates more of the brain? Because I think that helps us to feel connected, even though we don't understand necessarily that we want that. It is something that we do want at a subconscious level, and we can feel it at a conscious level later on.
It's kind of like exercise. I don't feel compelled to exercise, but every time I do, I feel better.
Yeah, and it's also the effects of that, you know, kind of days and weeks later. Like, if you exercise consistently, then generally you feel better about yourself, and you feel better about, and it's all kind of different things that form in the brain as well. Like, exercise stimulates brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which improves learning and it improves adaptation. So it's got all these other effects that it has that we don't necessarily connect directly with exercise that makes, you know, life just feel better. I mean, you can't really put your finger on it. Things are just kind of better overall. So, and it's the same here, where I think, and that's part of why I think this kind of training is important, so that we can start to understand there's a connection between this thing here and this thing here that I didn't realize. And that is why it's actually important for me to do these things, because it helps with these things here. Like, it's important to exercise because it helps me enjoy life more. It's important to connect in more personal ways because, you know, that helps me feel that, you know, life is worthwhile and it's meaningful. So thereby, when we start to understand those connections, then I think we start to do those things more. And yeah, we start to create a better society. We create a better environment for ourselves, and we feel like, hey, life's actually, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's they call it the constellations, and like, right, with your neurons and firing in different pathways that are just, we don't fully understand all the connections and how those pathways get built and all of those things. So thank you for taking the time to walk through that a little bit more for us. If people want to learn more about your Resiliency First Aid program, where can they go?
Yeah, so I can go to resiliencefirstaid.com. So we are going to be running some information sessions on these. So these are just free information sessions to come along, see what it's all about, see what's included. We are even making up like these little Resilience First Aid kits as well, with all kinds of materials. Oh. Like fridge magnets. Oh, actually, you can see it in the back there.
Yeah,
we've got all these resilience skills on little tiles that you can build your own resilience map, and a whole bunch of other things as well, just to make things a bit more visible, make it more tangible as well. Because I think that's one of the hard things with this, is when it's all mental and you can't see it and you can't touch it, it makes it harder. But if you can have little things, like we've got this little ball with all the resilience domains on them, that you know, it's just things that are lying around, and it makes it easier to talk about them, and also easier just to remember that, oh yeah, you know, there's these domains of resilience, and I should activate, you know, my tenacity right now, and all those kind of ideas. So yeah, come along to those webinars. We'll show more of those things, and it'll all be announced on resiliencefirstaid.com.
Thank you so much, Yuri. I appreciate you joining us and sharing more about the need for social connection, about opportunities to build resilient skills in those domains, and just generally helping us learn more about how our brains work.
Awesome. That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me here. And it's just good to always get these ideas out there, because, you know, ultimately, if we can all build a little bit of resilience and connect a little bit more with each other, I think just those little bits of extra effort that we make add up. And that's what really makes a difference in the long term.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Thanks to everyone for joining me for another episode of the Be Verdant podcast. You can visit our website, verdantconsulting.net, for more information about additional resilience training and some learning tools that we have available, including upcoming webinars. And stay tuned for more episodes coming out weekly. And with that, everybody, have a great day.